Blog Talk Radio.
When Wilfer will call, and even his night, I hurry to my blue heaven. You turn to the right, you find a little bright light that leads you to my blue heaven. You find a cozy place by a place. Thank you. Thank you. No. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The live audience is here. Wow. 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 I don't even know what to say. Calm down. I got to be honest. That was me. I like opening the show playing a little piano, you know? Thank you. Thank you to the live audience.
I didn't know you were so musically inclined.
I sound a lot like Harry Connick Jr.
Yeah.
Who had love with Fats Domino, because we opened with Fats Domino. So that's how I could change voices, though.
People are always telling Harry Connick Jr. he sounds a lot like Matthew Aaron.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. I do a pretty good Bing Crosby. Is that somewhere in between? By the way, I love Bing Crosby.
Oh, yeah.
The one Irish guy I like. Other than Christopher McDonald, who's on the show today. You may remember Chris McDonald.
Oh, you're on. You're in big trouble, though, pal. I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast.
You eat pieces of shit for breakfast? No.
No.
You might.
That's actually the best part of it. That no.
Would you like to introduce the show? Or?
Yeah, welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. I'm sorry, Steve, I'm in a joyous mood. Matthew Aaron on Facebook, if you can find me, which I doubt you will. Lee Capreas.
Lee Capreas, hello.
How you doing, Lee?
Okay, I'm good.
Good weekend?
Yeah.
Steve?
Hello, Steve Wyrick. I'm the killjoy of the bunch.
You're the killjoy?
And yeah, well, I wanted to introduce the show. I want you to do that.
Are you the killjoy?
I am the killjoy.
Oh, the audience loves the killjoy.
I'm kidding.
You're a hit.
Yeah. So what'd you do this weekend, Steve?
I filmed football, and I...
Oh, wow. Wow.
I swore a lot, and I was sick Saturday.
Oh boy, people got called down. You were sick Saturday.
Huh? I was vomiting out of every orifice.
It's crazy having a live studio audience.
It is.
Oh. Lee, how was your weekend?
Oh, it's pretty good.
Aces?
All aces. Yeah, aces. I did a show on Sunday. Went pretty well.
Were you funny?
Alex Luisi was there.
That doesn't mean anything. Have you seen what he laughs at?
Yeah.
Continue.
A little sparsely attended. I would have liked more people in the audience, but we had enough.
What was the best joke you told at the show? Do you got a one-liner? Do you got a one-liner from it?
I think I said that I made a reference to 60 Minutes, and the entire audience is under 25. And I said, I'm quite surprised no one watches 60 Minutes in an audience that shows up to a place where you can get a beer.
Crickets. Was that good? Go ahead. You can get a beer.
You can get a cylinder full of beer the size of a leaf blower.
You know, you could talk over the crickets in the audience. They're not going to stop for you. They're rude.
They're fucking
crickets, man.
That's good.
They don't fucking listen.
Oh, boy.
You think a cricket understands what the hell you're saying?
Anytime you tell me to say something funny, I'm just not going to speak.
Oh, come on. Does the audience like Lee? Come on. Of course they do. That's a polite clap if I ever heard one.
Very nice.
Right,
that's very nice. What's that, sir? Oh, come on. Inappropriate. Oh, no, come on.
Get him out of here.
Lee, yeah, well, I got your back here, Lee.
Okay,
well, I'm in a joyous mood, but I don't know why. Cause
I don't either.
I got to talk about a few things.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to hang tight with me. I have three things to talk about, I believe. I want to get to 2.5 Men.
Yes.
Which I watched last night. And I'm going to tell you very succinctly why it's not funny. But I do want to talk about the roast last night of one Carlos Estevez.
Yes.
Pat Tobias, by the way, says, stop giving Lee a hard time.
Oh.
The audience claps for you. They clap.
It's okay.
Well, I didn't. Yeah, whatever. But anyways, anyone watch the roast?
Yes. Sort of. I was here.
Any quick reviews before I go off on my rant?
It was sound, but they shouldn't pick targets. It's an easy target to pick.
That's part of my rant. Continue, Steve.
You were listening to it.
I was listening to it. It really wasn't a roast because Gilbert Gottfried wasn't there, nor was Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, where was Gilbert? Good point. I didn't notice Gilbert missing.
You cannot have Gilbert Gottfried there. It's sort of okay.
Maybe he's not a Chuck Sheen fan, though.
Yeah, it's sort of okay as long as you put Jeffrey Ross in his place. And
well,
he's the funniest one on there.
He's now a producer on the show.
Right.
So that may be part of the reason.
No.
But, okay. I have a big rant here.
Yeah.
First, I'm going to start with why I don't like these roasts to begin with.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to go into Twitter was in an uproar last night.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, I'm still a little sick. Twitter was in an uproar last night over a joke. Amy Schumer, that's about right. Amy Schumer made about Ryan Dunn.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it, folks. But and I want to go into my defense of that.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to 2.5 Men. So let me start, first of all, with why I don't like these roasts. Dean Martin, the Friars Club, they used to do roasts way back when. 70s, 80s, 90s, even before that. I think it goes as far back as the 40s. Late 40s, would you say, Lee? Does that sound about right? 47?
Right. I'm not positive.
I think it's 47.
Yeah.
These roasts were about A-listers poking fun at their A-lister friends who have no scandals, who weren't lewd, crude, and rude in public, who you didn't hear cocaine jokes, you didn't hear wife-beating jokes, you didn't hear rape jokes, you didn't hear jokes about guys flying to their deaths at the speed of 140 miles per hour. You didn't hear those jokes. It was, let me put it in terms our audience, which is very young and male, would understand. George Clooney is the roast master, and there's Matt Damon, Bradley Pitt, Ryan Gosling, who else would be there? Don Cheadle, okay? And George Clooney would be making funny jokes, and they would be a little racy, but there was no ill will. There was no harm. They weren't mean. Mm. They weren't mean as in, like, you are a fuck-up, okay? And here's what the roasts have become. They have become grabbing any D-lister or, and this is where I'm really offended, people with diseases. Diseases. Flavor Flav, Charlie Sheen, and, well, diseases, I guess, Pam Anderson. But that's a different kind of diseases.
Yeah.
Or D-listers, Pam Anderson, Flavor Flav, again, Larry the Cable Guy.
Easy targets.
Okay. Well, they can't get anyone A-list.
Right.
Then this dais is populated by non-comedians like Steve-O, a convicted rapist in Mike Tyson. Kate Walsh is there she's as close to A-list as it got on that fucking show.
Right.
Who's Anthony Jeselnik? Who's Amy Schumer? Who else was there? Jeff Ross, Patrice O'Neill. Oh, yeah, I love how he's like, yeah, Patrice, my bro, my pal. Whatever, Louise. You don't know no Patrice. So
that's
here's
his cousin.
Here's the deal.
Oh yeah.
Here's the deal. I just don't think these roasts are funny. Highest rated roast ever last night.
Oh,
people
sure.
loved it.
I'm sure.
I get it, but you know what? It's not the old days, and I think it's kind of. Are we championing and celebrating a guy who has drug and alcohol problems and beats his wife and rips on Jews and, are we celebrating that?
Well, I think it's kind of gotten into the era of we take the people who need redemption in a way and they have to, you know what I mean? And we
don't remember, Charlie's getting a $2 to $3 million payday, too, out of this.
Right.
What, Mikey? You got something to say?
Oh, I almost got a point.
Mikey,
across.
You got your hand up, but go ahead.
Let Mike first.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lee. Go ahead.
All right. Well, that was very mannered. And they always follow a predictable form now. They get somebody like Shatner or somebody that's been around a while. Carl Reiner was for the last one for Joan Rivers. They get an up-and-coming comedian who's doing good on the scene, Anthony, I forget his last name. That no one can pronounce. They get a couple random people, and they always do the same jokes. You're an up-and-coming comic. No one knows who you are. That's what the joke is about them. You're an old actor who's been around for a while. You're washed up.
Okay.
They have people. Every guest plays a role
to the point where it's so by the numbers.
Okay.
And they do it in a way of this.
Well, I mean, the other roasts were kind of like that to a degree.
Right, but this is definitely the post.
So you're talking like no names.
Right, right. But like everyone's playing a role, and okay. This is definitely the no. This is the no shame era,
yeah.
Where everyone is Rupert Pupkin and has no public
shame.
Well,
let's see what Mikey has to say here.
Yeah.
See if he agrees with you, disagrees with you.
Post Rupert Pupkin.
Mikey, I know you like these things to a degree, so why don't you talk to me about it here?
Well,
Mikey Turzo, ladies and gentlemen, sitting in.
I happen to be a big fan of the roasts that they do, and I was a huge fan of Dean Martin roast because a friend of mine got the DVD box set for Christmas, and I remember watching it at the cigar shop all the time. One of the big differences I think you have to look at with the way Hollywood is today is the A-listers that we have, so to speak. As much as they're very good movie actors, they're very good, you know, in theater and things of that nature.
Sure.
I don't think they're all around entertainers that we had back in the day. So maybe I don't know if they can stand up and do jokes and be funny or
George Clooney can though.
Maybe George Clooney can, but, I mean...
Matt Damon can. Funny guy.
But
Ben Affleck. Funny guy.
Don't you think that we don't live in an era anymore when they would put A-listers up on the dais? Because now, I don't think the entertainment circuit would subject its own
people.
Did
you just hear these two, by the way?
No.
Mark Wahlberg. Funny guy.
Oh.
Wow.
That one may be debatable.
The entertainment world wouldn't subject its own people
to
that kind of.
Okay, well, I think we've beaten that horse dead.
All right.
All right, Amy Schumer on Steve-O. Here's the joke. And then I'm going to explain the Twitter uproar. I'm going to explain my part in it. And I'm going to explain why I'm pissed off.
And Steve-O is here. Steve-O, great try. Steve-O! But I truly am, no joke, sorry for the loss of your friend Ryan Dunn. I know you must have been thinking it could have been me, and I know we were all thinking, why wasn't it?
Okay. First of all, the Twitter uproar is all of Ryan Dunn's fans came out last night on the Twitter, and they were all like, oh, my God, how'd she rip on Ryan? Oh, my God.
She ripped on Steve-O.
Okay, well, that's first of all. But thanks for making that point for me, Lee. Do I need to quiet you down over there?
No.
I'm in the middle of a rant here. Okay. Oh, call, no, people.
Okay.
I'm very sorry about that, Lee. It should not have gotten out of hand like that. People nowadays.
The studio audience gets gifts every time they boo, by the way.
Oh, they wait for me to say, "Oh, Steve." That's the old sitcom joke there, I guess.
It is. Yes.
All right, so here's the deal. No one was making fun of Ryan Dunn, but whatever. There. Two, this country's getting way too sensitive. But I'll get to that in a moment. And I'll get to why I have a lot of things in common with Glenn Beck in a moment. And it's gonna be the only time you ever hear that out of me. All right, here's exactly what I wrote. I got into a fight with a few people on Facebook about it, too, because I go, why do you care? Like, why? First of all, it's a roast. Okay, here's why these people are hypocrites that all care. You're watching this thing, right? And you're laughing at this thing. This roast is glorifying a man who loves hookers, blow, beats his wives and girlfriends, is an absentee father to many degrees, has... abandoned his family numerous times. This is who we're glorifying. A guy who quit the show he was working on and almost put hundreds of people out of work. And, by the way, is now getting a $125 million payday to sit at home. Sit at home. That's how much they're paying Charlie Sheen not to do the show. $125 million. So this is a guy we're glorifying. Then on top of it, you got Jeff Ross hugging and all over Mike Tyson. Everyone's laughing and loving Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was getting more verbal blowies last night than I've ever heard in my life. Mike Tyson, a glorified convicted rapist who beat his wife, Robin Givens, to a pulp one night. Yes, okay. We're already glorifying and loving these two people. You're going to hate abroad for going on the air and making a joke about some guy who shoved a Hot Wheel up his ass, and that's his claim to fame, dying? By the way, a drunk driver who in his passenger seat was one of our fine people from the armed forces, also died. Drunk driver, 140 miles per hour, off a bridge, for people that forgot. And that is what we're outraged about. And by the way, Amy Winehouse died, and say what you will about her, but according to Emmy reports, died of natural causes. And no one was outraged at Amy Winehouse being made fun of last night.
No.
Not one single fucking person. So you're going to tell me this, a roast that's classless to begin with and has been classless since maybe not its reinstitution in 2003, but probably since that Dennis Leary roast has been pretty classless. And you're going to tell me you're outraged over that? That joke. Let me play it again one more time for people that don't understand how stupid this is. He was trending on Twitter. This was the biggest deal on Twitter last night. Mm-hmm. I have gotten into 10 or 15 fights with people on Twitter over this.
And Steve-O is here. Steve-O, great try. Steve-O! But I truly am, no joke, sorry for the loss of your friend Ryan Dunn. I know you must have been thinking it could have been me, and I know we were all thinking, why wasn't it?
Okay, and by the way, I'll finish this up and I'll let you guys have your opinions. In the last 3 months, we have lost 127 people in the U.S. Armed Forces. In the last 3 months, those lives, no one talks about, no one's outraged, no one gives a shit. I think it's fair to say that. Excuse me. No, it is correct. What's not right? Oh, well, yeah,
yes.
I agree that you should not care. But I talked to these people on Twitter yesterday, and they all care more about Ryan Dunn. And I asked numerous people, and these are all girls and dudes between the ages of 18 and 25. And I go, aren't you a little more worried about the economic downturn that's happening in this country when your parents run out of money and you won't have any money to mooch off of because you can't get a job because the unemployment rate's at 11% and you're not going to school anyway, so you have no fucking education? Aren't you a little more worried about that? How about the wars that we're still fighting that President Obama has promised to take us out of that never happened? How about shutting down Guantanamo Bay like President Obama said he would do? How about the Republicans somehow pulling the wool over everyone's eyes? And this is why the Republicans are geniuses. They've somehow convinced all the middle class and lower class people that taxing the rich is a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, this is what you're worried about? A guy that died 6 months ago and a joke that was barely even about him.
Right.
This is what you're worried about. And I'm telling you, it was trending hot. Thousands of tweets. It's fucking ridiculous. I fear for our country. These people are scary. Scary. That's all I got to say about it. You have your say. You have your say. I'm going to let you talk.
Beautiful.
Go first.
Yeah, I honestly, not a whole lot else to say on my end because I agree. But if Ryan Dunn was a living, that's manslaughter right there.
Yes, I did say that. I believe it was on Bruce Fretz's book. I said, and yeah, that's the best part. If he lived through this all and the guy still died that was with them, that was in the armed forces, that's manslaughter. And I'm pretty sure he'd be going to jail for that for quite a while. And we would be saying, oh, no, pity him.
Like, let me just bring this up.
It's ridiculous.
Let me bring up, death is unfortunate, but what he did to die, not so unfortunate. It's like drunk driving is drunk driving. And that's not, you know,
I'm tired
what are you
going
to do?
You know what it is? This is what the topic is. Sensitivity in this country, and this is where Glenn Beck and I see eye to eye. Nobody tells the truth anymore, at least their opinion or their version of the truth. Everyone needs to follow curtail, and that means, for instance, oh my God, we can't talk about anyone that's died in a bad manner.
Fuck that.
I'll give you another example. Last
you could have been the biggest asshole in the world.
Last night, Chaz Bono's on Dancing
with
the
stars. Yeah.
If I said Chaz Bono is fat, out of shape, and he was complaining on the show. He was complaining on the show that how tired and how painful this is because he's so fat and out of shape for a middle-aged man. Kirstie Alley, 60 years old, came in second place on that show last year. When she came on the show, she clocked in at around 250 pounds. I don't want to hear about a 60-year-old woman that can not bitch and complain and do the work. But if I say that about Chaz, everyone's like, he can't say that because he's transgender. There it is.
Right.
There's another. It's the country has become so sensitive.
Right.
And that's just an example. It's just saying you can't talk about anything anymore. It's too fucking sensitive.
Right.
Obama,
yeah.
When he comes up with any new game plan, with any new bill, he makes sure to include the Republicans, what the Republicans want in the bill from the get-go. Because he's so sensitive to them. Why?
Right.
Why? You play hardball. You go, I want double what I should be getting, and you're getting nothing. And then you compromise to 50-50.
Yeah.
You don't start out 50-50 because you're going to lose.
He should be making decisions like Bush, really.
Well, this is why the Republicans are geniuses.
Yeah.
Because they're insensitive, they don't give a fuck, and they're going to do their way, their things their way.
Pretty much.
Geniuses. I'm not a Republican, as everyone knows.
I will,
but they're geniuses.
I will say this: I think it took a little balls for Amy Schumer to tell that joke. And Steve-O is touring the country as a comedian. You're putting yourself out there, dude. I mean, this is
not a roast.
Comedy is rough.
He agreed to do the roast.
You agreed to do it.
This is a guy whose claim to fame is getting shot out of a porta potty that was full in the air.
Right. That was funny.
Why do I give a fuck about you?
Or getting his ass
pierced. I don't give a flying crap about you.
Well, I do think that was funny. He did that to entertain
me.
There
are true talented people like Christopher McDonald, who's on our fucking show today. The guy was pre-med. In his senior year, he decided to go into the acting business. Balls. Risk. Controversy. If you don't speak the truth in this country, you're not going to go anywhere anyways.
No.
Think of everyone famous and tell me one really famous person who has not been controversial at some point in time.
Right.
Bill Maher, Glenn Beck, Tom Cruise. I mean, I can go through a list.
But isn't, like, there's so much wasted anger in this country. Look at what people are mad at. Remember Kurt Cobain died, and there was a 60 Minutes piece, and then Andy Rooney pissed off a whole bunch of Gen Xers. He said he didn't know who this guy was. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't care. And then everybody fucking lost their shit.
But at least Kurt Cobain was talented.
Yeah.
I'm not shitting on these guys for making money. Good for them for being successful. That's not what this is about, the jackass guys. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact of the matter is that Ryan Dunn was on the Emmy Memoriam on Sunday night, placed in between Tom Bosley and Leslie Nielsen.
And before Sherwood Schwartz, by the way.
Yeah, and before Sherwood Schwartz.
What the hell is going on?
Explain to me how that happened.
Tom Bosley.
That Dunn
as
family.
Bosley.
I want to know what parties this Dunn family was having to get that to happen.
I get it. Like, life's not fair.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here bitching because life's not fair. I get it. I'm not going to keep preaching about this. This is the only time in this show I plan on talking about this. But look, if people don't speak their true opinion, and if people aren't afraid to be a little controversial, nothing in this country is ever going to change in any spectrum, social, media, geography-wise even. Fuck anything. Yeah. Nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
Because everyone just wants to play by the law of the land.
Yeah.
The very thick line that everyone stands on instead of the thin line.
Well, there are bigger things going on than your emotions, than how you feel about something.
I agree.
Glenn Beck. You heard it here, folks.
And this is like the tree. It started with sensitivity, and it's gone into there's reality TV comes. And there's reality TV now in this tree because I'm sitting here with a legitimate star, a legitimate famous for being talented guy,
right.
Chris McDonald tonight. And we care more about people named Snooki and what's the other guy? Vinny.
Situation.
Vinny Barbarino.
Yeah.
And Ronnie. Come on, man.
Tail spinning. It really is.
We need to appreciate the talent we have.
And not in that good tailspin way.
Hey, if this upcoming generation, I'm 28, so I could talk about this upcoming generation. If they have anything to show, if what they're showing now proves anything, it's in the future we're going to have a lot less talent.
Right.
So we better enjoy and appreciate the talent we have on now. And that's why we're having on a guy like Chris McDonald. I tell Pat who I want to have on. I tell Pat who I want to have on because I want to have these people on that I respect, that I think are talented, they have great stories to share, and that have a brain in their head.
It's kind of nice to have a brain in that old head, isn't it?
Just saying. So I'm done ranting there.
Okay. Do you feel better?
Yeah, I'm a little.
You look like
I'm
you're
a
better.
Little better. You I look... need to get all that out.
Man, you did. No, I'm glad you did.
That was epic.
I'm glad you said it all.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I got all that out.
I am too.
You're blowing my mind, man.
Don't you feel better?
I've been a little angry. I've been sitting on that for a whole night.
I know you have.
I've been a little fired up. Two and a Half Men.
Oh,
I'll get to that review after Chris McDonald's calling in any moment. But,
Two and a Half Men.
You know what? I can do Two and a Half Men real quick.
Yeah.
Two and a Half Men. You want to know why it's not funny? Ashton Kutcher now plays this guy who's a billionaire. He's got a big wiener, a perfect body, naked in every scene, and he...
Who couldn't relate?
He's heartbroken over a girl breaking up with him, tries to commit suicide, and ends up banging two broads at the same time at the end of the episode. This is not funny. This is not relatable. By the way, the ashes gag, Monty
yeah.
Python and Peter Toland did it much better. There's a scene where John Cryer throws all of Sheen's ashes in the air,
yeah.
and they all end up on the floor, which happened in the Rescue Me finale was way better in that scene.
Big Lebowski.
By the way, those shows aren't funny because they're not relatable. No one wants to see billionaires with hot women and hot bodies having problems.
Well, right? Who relates to billionaire problems?
Here's a show that may be funny. Poor, fat slob who drives a yellow SUV and lives with his mother.
Possibly.
What one sounds funnier to you?
Wait, that's...
I'm leaning towards
the SUV. Oh, don't listen to Luisi.
If those two lived together, that would be funny.
Yes. Well, yeah. We do live together.
Let me just,
if that was a real scenario.
Like you open a door at the same time and they collide. Whoop, whoa.
What's funnier, Steve, as a writer?
Oh, the fat slob, of course. The I'm just going to toss this out on the table. We had someone on the show who said rich problems aren't funny. Or rich,
well, could,
you know,
could
rich
a show,
problems aren't funny.
Could a show about a billionaire be funny? Yes. Yes, it could.
Well, here's the example. No, I don't think it can.
Really?
Here's the example I gave to Phil Rosenthal, and he agreed 100%. There's a man. He's going to a party. There's a valet at the party. He gives the valet the keys to his Bentley. That's the scene.
Yeah.
There's a man. He's going to a party. He gives the valet the keys to his Ford Pinto. Which one's funnier?
That I agree with you.
There you go.
But if the billionaire was like a completely socially inept... Like a socially inept billionaire didn't know how to do anything. Like Peter Sellers and being there. Did you ever see the show Jeep and Rooster with Hugh Laurie?
Well, we'll get to that. Let's get to that. But I have a phone call. You're on the Matt Barron Show. Who am I speaking with?
You're talking to me.
I am talking to you.
Beautiful, baby. Chris McDonald calling in as instructed.
Chris, how are you, sir?
Life is... I'm living the dream, baby. Living the dream, Matt. How you doing?
I got to say, you are living the dream.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about this. I was talking about this earlier with the guys. Is it true you were pre-med, Chris?
For about 2 years at college.
Jesus. So you're a smart fucking guy.
I was too smart for my... I got smart. I said to myself, this will kill me if I do. I would be one of those dentists that jumped out of a building or something. I was doing it for my parents, not for myself. So when I found something to do on the side called theater and dance and meeting all kinds of girls, and I thought, you know, life is going to be good if I choose this. So I did, and they've forgiven me, thank God.
That's I think a lot of people can relate to that too, which is what makes you such a cool guy. I think a lot of people do what their parents want them to do at first. And the truly ballsy ones say, you know what? No. And so what made you go, was it other than the girls, what made you go acting, dancing, theater, Broadway? What made you do that?
Well, I tell you, I got lucky. I was doing all these, you know, art. There was all the science stuff, and I was trying to fill out my schedule. I said, I'll do this theater thing. And I swear to God, I went in there, and I got cast, and I thought, I'll give this a try. And all the fear went away, and I was just in the zone. And the first time you hear that applause, it was a great play, of course. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I was playing Nick, the young professor guy. And it was just a terrific experience. And I kind of never looked back. But I tell you, it wasn't that brave, because what I did was I waited for my father, who was an educator, to go on a sabbatical. So he was like halfway across the country. Then that's when I switched my major. So he came back and was like, he couldn't do anything about it. So. That was good.
That's a smooth move. I like that. So what would you say your big break was, Chris? Would you say it was in the theater, or was it when you got your first TV show, movie?
Well, I've had several big breaks, actually. It only takes about five to make you a working actor.
Very good.
The first one I did was in theater, of course. That's where everybody starts, I believe. And, you know, you put your time in, and that's where the actor has the most control, man. I tell you, when they say the curtain goes up, it's you. The play's in your hands. The story is in your hands to tell. So it's, you know, it's your job to bring it home. And it's a tremendously empowering, wonderful thing, especially if the material's good. And I was doing this play called Nightclub Cantata, and I was saying, my God, this is, it was out there, it was crazy, but I won the Obie Award back in the day, and I was the first replacement cast out in Boston. That's where I went right after college. And so I caught everything else, and I never looked back. I never did anything else. I'll either starve or I'll act, or basically act or I'll starve. And that's the kind of commitment thing. Then in film, it was a movie called Grease 2, and everybody, to this day, people stop me in the street. It didn't make half the money the first one did, but in its own right, it had its own original take on the whole, you know, 50s Rydell High thing. And I had Michelle Pfeiffer, so we had that going for us.
What do you
think? Axel Caulfield, yes, that was good.
Chris, at what point did you know you were famous?
Man, I don't know if I still know it. I mean, when people know your name, that's good. But, you know, for years I was that guy. You're that guy. Hey, dude, you're the shooter. They just name movies, you know. They just name movies you've been in. So I guess when they start knowing your name, you start going, well, there you go.
Yeah, you know, I've always liked you. So we've always known your name over here. We're big fans.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you. Thanks.
So you studied at Stella Adler, I read.
Yes.
Was that when Stella was still kicking, or did you work with her, or what?
I had a unique time with Stella, because what happened, she was more than kicking. She was, I think, in her late prime, if you will. And I met her in California. And she asked me, if you work your ass off, you could do really well. This is a woman that changed my life as an actor. It made me feel what a real actor's responsibility is to the material, to the writer, to the craft of acting. And I know it's not just, trying to go to classes, and which still goes on Hollywood today. People go to class and they go, hey, she's kind of hot. I'd like to do a scene study with her. I love scene. But it wasn't about that. It was about the work, man. And so what I did was I was, super broke. So she said, well, can you bartend? I said, I can bartend. So she said, well, you'll bartend at all my parties. So I was with two other actors who were students, would bartend these amazing dinner parties she would throw in Hollywood. And, the who's who would come through. And then Stella was so kind and so generous. After this whole evening, she would invite the students into the room to sit with these luminaries. And it was like pinch me time. I was like, wow, that's fantastic. So not only did I do that and not have to pay for class, and I just, I worked my tuition off, I followed her to New York, and then I followed her back to Los Angeles, and then I followed her to New York, and I graduated from the program there, and it was just brilliant. And then I kept going back every time she came to L.A. till she passed. But phenomenal teaching. Yeah.
Now, Chris, at what point in time was this in your life, mid-20s?
Yes, I would say 25, 26, 27, yeah.
So these were your Larry Poindexter Harley bike riding years?
Yes, Larry Poindexter. I know, he's a funny guy, isn't he? I love Larry.
He is he's a good guy. He's a good friend, too. I like him a lot. He's a great guy.
He's a hoot. Yeah, and he's working now. I'm very happy for him. It's good.
He's working now. That's good. Yeah. Do you got any stories about your and Larry's Harley days?
Well, Larry and I used to go. You know, we used to be in that little group, too. A guy named Clooney, George Clooney, before he became George Clooney.
I heard about that. You guys play a little basketball, shooting some hoops?
Yeah, we play some ball with George. And Larry's always been a great athlete, too. But, it was kind of time where the Harleys were big. And, I still have mine. I just don't drive it every day like I used to out of necessity. But it was a time when... you'd get together, you'd hit some basketballs, you get on the bikes, you ride out to the rock store, have some lunch, which is a really twisty, windy road out here, and it's great. And then you'd, get split up at the end of the day. It was just kind of the thing you did every third or fourth weekend. So it was a lot of fun. And, I don't see these guys enough, which is a shame. I saw George up in the Toronto Film Festival. Apparently, he's got the winner of films this year. Unbelievable.
Ides of March looks fantastic.
It really does. I think he might get nominated like five times for it, directing, writing, acting, all that stuff. So that's good. But, yeah, those are great times when you think of those guys back in the day.
Well, what I was wondering, I've talked to Larry about this. I'm guessing the women had to be pretty good when it's you, Larry, and George Clooney hanging out. A couple good-looking guys, actors, you got dance moves, funny.
You know what I think? I think we're all just kind of a little bit, we grew into our looks. I mean, speaking for myself, I had this Irish fro that was absolutely atrocious. I wanted longish hair, but my hair is not that kind of hair. It just kind of grows out sideways. And I looked like an idiot. But and then I pulled my helmet off, and I'd really look like an idiot. So, but, you know, George and Larry would pull down some very interesting females. So I would, you know, by attrition, I'd get a little action from time to time.
If they're a runoff.
That's the way to do it. I'm making friends with all these MTV kids, so when I go out there, maybe I'll get a little fat girl action on the side.
Oh, there it is. Been there, done that. Yeah.
I got to tell you, one of your first really memorable performances, I think, for movie fans anywhere is Thelma and Louise. And you told a very interesting story that I don't know if you remember, but I'm going to try to jog your memory, on Rocco's dinner show that he has on Bravo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, quick little aside. I was hoping you could share that story with our audience.
Well, I believe I was talking about they had Billy Baldwin for the part that ultimately went to this kid named Brad Pitt.
Yes.
But Billy Baldwin said, and I think he was advised to, I think he's much to his chagrin now, but he was advised to take Backdraft with a great director, Ron Howard.
Yeah.
Opposite little great actors. Because nobody knew. Ridley Scott was making this movie that was sort of out of his wheelhouse. It wasn't the action picture. It didn't have all the special effects in it that he usually was famous for. And so he chose to do the other film. They looked like crazy to find somebody else and landed on Brad Pitt, which ultimately was the rocket ship to stardom for the kid. And it just had the 20th year. Check it out. 20 years ago that's when that film came out. They had it at the Academy here in Los Angeles, and Gina was up on the dais, and Callie Corey, who wrote it and won the Oscar, and the producers were there, and it was really nice. And I was working late, so I came in and saw the last bit of it. I had a new print of it. It's stunning. But anyway, that was a very interesting experience. That whole movie was blew doors open for me because it made so much noise. Cover of Time magazine. People loved it. There was this movie that, I mean, two women could be the engine of a movie.
Yeah,
keep it going. So they've had a lot of copycats since then, but it stands alone. It's a really unique and wonderful movie due to the extremely fresh take that Ridley Scott, I think, gave the movie and the great writing by Callie Corey.
Yeah,
and the action one, Betty.
Great flick. I did want to bring up, you know, flick's great, by the way, when it gets parodied and everything. I mean, The Simpsons have parodied it. When you're parodied by The Simpsons, that's the be-all, end-all. So
that's pretty much it. That's when I knew I was famous, exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, back to a couple earlier roles real quick. I forgot to ask you. So when you do Grease 2, and I guess I forgot to ask you because I don't know if I could watch Grease 2. I wasn't a Grease guy. I didn't really get into one. But did anyone from that former cast or crew give you guys any advice or anything? Did they pass the torch at all?
No, I wish there was more connection. I just gotten a little friendlier with John Travolta now, but I knew Barry Pepper was one of the key birds, and he was nice enough to, you know, to give us some blessing. But at the same time, I think they were kind of pissed they weren't in the second one or something, because John went off to be, you know, a megastar.
Yeah,
and we did have Dee Dee Khan. We had a lot of the teachers, you know, were the same thing from the first movie as well. And but no, to answer your question, it wasn't a lot of that. It was what we had was what our ice in the hole was. We had Pat Birch, who choreographed the first one, and she directed the second one. So she was like hands on. So she knew exactly what she was doing. And I thought the music was unique and wonderful. It wasn't, you know, a famous play, a famous musical, but it was unique in its own way, and we had a lot of laughs doing it. I'll never forget this thing. They used to give the T-Birds time to learn to ride your motorcycles, and I've been riding motorcycles since I was like 8, so it was a time for me to like rip up and down the stairways in the high school and on a motorcycle on the 305. It was a complete blast.
That's awesome.
A wonderful time.
That's very cool. You were also on my favorite show ever, Matlock.
Are you kidding me? I love Matlock. I did two of those things.
I'm the only 28-year-old who says his favorite show is Matlock, probably, but yes. A lot of time with Grandma. A lot of time with Grandma. Remember this? Chris remembers. He knows the Matlock.
It's perfect. You know right away it's Matlock, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I had a great experience. I went down there. I was doing the scene with, like, three other guys, and we were being bad, and we were, you know, guilty, obviously. But what they did was on our first week, they went out, and Andy Griffith, God bless him, he says, well, if you want to shoot it, we're going to shoot right in my town here. So we went down to, like, North Carolina, and on the weekend, we went out, and we were, you know, fishing, because it's a great fishing town. It's that time of the year. So you got four guys displaced from Hollywood in a little North Carolina town, and I swear to God, I caught a 300-pound blue marlin. It was an unbelievable weekend. It was unbelievable. We tagged and released, of course, but what an experience that whole thing was. Those kind of things you never forget. So, and then another one after that, because I really love that show, too. I love him. And you know what? Here's a bad thing about that. Andy has been in hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of television.
Yeah.
And he's never won an Emmy.
Yikes. I did not know that.
I just thought he won a Grammy for reading and singing the songs and stuff for the kids' books he does. But I could not believe it.
No, I can't believe it either. I can't believe that.
Yeah, I want to campaign for the guy to like get the Life Achievement Award or something, because he was, you know, instrumental in your life and my life and tons of people's lives with all the great stuff he did. How about, you know, how great was Andy of Mayberry? Come on, it was
iconic. The best.
He was one
of the originals. Oh,
absolutely.
Man, I didn't know that. They, you know, and the Academy is really going to regret that if Andy's not around to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award. I think they'll regret that pretty badly. So
I would think he's great.
But moving on to more of your career that I love, a little film that is a personal favorite of mine, Dutch. Ed O'Neill, John Hughes. How awesome is that? That you worked with Ed O'Neill and John Hughes. For me, that's like the trifecta triangle. Chris McDonald, Ed O'Neill, John Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. That's kind. I love doing that movie. I saw Ed O'Neill two nights ago at the Emmys, and I'm sitting three rows back, and he looks back at me, and he gives me that look, you know, when he hit me in the face?
Yes.
And he knocked me down? John Hughes had just come to the set that day saying, well, Slapjack's pretty big. That's Home Alone movie of mine. It's done very well. So let's add this. So he just basically wrote that on the spot. And Ed came in, just gave me that whack with the ring. And so that's what he did 2 days ago. So it's just like a bonding experience. I love the guy. He's fantastic. Yeah. Great movie.
I was going to say, how do you take a straight fall like that? Because you didn't fall down in like a clump. You just went straight backward. Is that painful?
Exactly. And my feet shot up.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I just went for it. One thing I am is that I commit. It may be a crazy choice, but I do commit. And I think they used the very first take on that one.
No, that's
just like in Thelma Louise, when I was walking out of the house, that very first take of that movie, I had these brand new shoes on from wardrobe, and Ridley, and all his wisdom, said, all right, I want these two guys in the driveway. I don't remember the scene, but I'm walking outside, going to get into my Corvette to go off to work. And I slip and fall with these new shoes on, walking on this wood, and my head goes, bam, back into a cement mixer. But I keep going, and I make a ad lib, a couple lines. I get in the car and pull off. He laughs so hard, he says, you know, we could do another one, but that is in the movie. That was hysterical.
Well, that's great. You know what's also crazy is you have another thing in common with another one of my friends. You, excuse me, I'm still sick. You and Craig Bierko both did episodes of FC Nest. Richard Mulligan.
God, I love Richard Mulligan. What a nice man.
Yeah, what a great show, too. What a great
show. I had a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had met that guy. They brought me in to play that Southern boy that I do sometimes from Arkansas. And it was a blast. He was dumb as a box of rocks, but he just loved Laverne. And it was great. It was like, I remember this one thing. It was like, they give me song lyrics to respond to people, because I just didn't have any kind of personalities. Like, so I said to Richard Mulligan, hey, you, get off of my cloud. It's like, what? It's retarded. But we had a good laugh. It was like back in the day when sitcoms were king, you know?
I hope they go back to that way. So do you know Craig Bierko? Do you got any Craig Bierko stories? We're always asking.
I love Craig Bierko. I don't work with him enough, but I did do another thing with him. We did a spoof movie called Superhero Movie. The Weinsteins produced it, and they had done all the other spoof movies
along
that genre.
Correct. You were the
I was the super bad superhero, which was a blast.
Yes.
But well, here's the thing. The fun thing, we were almost done with the movie, and then I think Bob Weinstein came in and he said, okay, now we need to spice this up. So he brought in Pam Anderson. And he brought in Craig Bierko to play the Wolfman.
Right? Yeah, oh, yeah.
The Wolverine, yeah. So they put him up in all this great makeup and all this crazy stuff. And so that's when I hung out in the set with him. We just laughed and laughed and laughed. And didn't even make the movie. I think that made the final cut.
No,
but
it didn't. Craig and I've talked about that. I love Craig though, but I gotta say,
I did too, and I'm following his footsteps right now too, Matt. I'm doing working with David Kelly now. He did a stint on Boston Legal that was insanely difficult to do, man, but he was terrific.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, we'll get to Harry's Law, but I really liked that show.
Oh, good.
And we're glad you got added full time. We like you and Paul McCrane a lot, and we were hoping those would be full ads.
Yeah, oh, good. Thank you. Yeah, Paul, God bless him. He just won the Emmy for Best Guest Star and directed one this year, so in one.
He's
so
awesome. His work on ER was phenomenal.
He's a great actor.
I want to bring up Quiz Show, which I think is when critics took notice of you after Thelma and Louise, and then there was Quiz Show.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of mainstream critics were like, this Chris McDonald guy's good.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah, I remember reading a nice article that was basically saying, could this be the same actor? I mean, because to play playing a guy like that and then to play this, you know, the kind of, I didn't see him as smarmy at all, but playing the real guy, you know, Jack Barry was an honor. Because that's someone calling in, don't you know? Sorry. But, hey, how's my voice coming through? I'm on my cell phone here in downtown.
You sound great to me, and I haven't gotten any complaints from fans yet. So.
All right, good.
And then I got to tell you, there was a period of time, though, by the way. Oh, do you have a story about Quiz Show, though? I'll let you do that.
Well, I do. Everybody in all of Hollywood and New York and Europe was trying to get this role of, the teacher that went bad, this guy named Ralph Fiennes comes in, and people go, now, who is this Ralph Fiennes guy? Oh, he just came on this movie, Schindler something. So we don't know because the movie hasn't come out yet. And he and I hang out in New York because we started the show basically with the 21 Game show. We started that, and so for like a week and a half, 2 weeks maybe, we were just doing that show. So he and I would pal around quite a bit because there wasn't very many leads. It was just John, who lived in New York, and then he and I, who were just, transplanted there while we were making the movie. So we hung out quite a bit. I want to tell you, the movie opened the second week we started shooting, Schindler's List opened. The change, I've never seen it before, I don't know if I'll ever see it again, in this man's perception, if you will, in the bars, the same bars we were going to, just to, you know, have a nice cocktail and have a nice time. It was like he became a Beatle overnight.
Oh, wow.
And it was crazy, the amount of tension. I look at him, he'd just shrug and go, I don't know, I'm having fun, though. And he is just a brilliant, brilliant actor. And nobody really knew because the jury was still out if this was going to be good. And then, of course, Schindler's List, he was phenomenal in. And also did a very, very difficult part and played it beautifully in Quiz Show. I loved it. So and Redford just let us go at it. He just said, hey, just play the game. So I thank God I did all my research and stuff so I could, like, ad-lib and make a small talk with all these people. But I studied this guy pretty much. He was in you can go to the television radio archives in New York and look up the original shows. And I did a few hours of that.
Wow.
I found his cadence, which I really wanted to get because people knew him. He was from New York, and people knew him there. So I wanted to make sure that it was a really good, take on him, not a impersonation so much as and get the flavor of who he was. So it was a great experience. One of my probably top three movies that I ever made was that movie because the experience was phenomenal.
That's why you're a great actor. I got to tell you too, that's the first story I ever heard where someone said they were having a lot of fun after filming Schindler's List. So there is a first for everything. Good for Ray.
Yeah, well, there was only one way to go with that character. My God, it was dark, wasn't it? Oh, my God.
Yeah,
Lord.
I guess you could decide to be depressed for the rest of your life or you can have fun with it, I guess.
Yeah, I think he chose the light, which was smart.
Yeah, good move. I got to tell you, there was a period of time in the late 90s where you were probably my favorite actor growing up because I'm going to rattle off the comedies that growing up wanting to be a comedian, watching you in these films, this is why you're so memorable. Happy Gilmore, Celtic Pride, Celtic Pride. Here's my all-time favorite with you. Well, I don't know. It's all talks of a little film called Dirty Work.
Love Dirty Work.
Oh, you're one of those. Okay, I get it.
I am one of those.
I love that movie. And I did some dark ones, too, that were also very, very funny.
The Rich Man
FLC Punk.
Oh, yes, FLC Punk, yes.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting, dark, yet very funny movie at the same time.
Yes, yeah. And at that time, you just took off for me. That was like, so, because I love Celtic Pride. And that's an early Apatow film. He wrote it. And, yeah, a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, this is when you came into the limelight for me, being a comedian. And what is that like, going from, you're doing some great films, you just did Quiz Show, and now you're going to jump into Happy Gilmore, Celtic Pride. What happens at that point?
Well, like I say, you commit to it. The material was, you know, night and day. It could have, it was a 180, what you were doing, playing like a real character from Quiz Show, who is, you know, Redford gave a great direction. He says, you're Chrome. You embody the 50s. And I was like, wow, what a great, just, you know, just to remember Chrome. You're shiny, you're big, you're bold, you're in front of that box that's now in everybody's house. So that was terrific to take that, you know, from that historical point of view, and then, you know, flip your head around doing this crazy golf movie, and then a crazier basketball movie, and then yet a crazier Dirty Work, which where I had chihuahuas peeing in my mouth. Oh my God, it was nuts. But I had a blast, and a lot of people love them. I tell you, we made two of those three in Canada, and man, we had a blast. The crews there were phenomenal, and we just tried to outdo each other.
Well, I think it's a testament to you as an actor that you could go from filming 1 year The Rich Man's Wife and be the baddest son of a bitch in a movie to then doing something like, you know, The Faculty even, or Dirty Work. I mean, that's you work quite a bit. So you're always playing different characters. And as someone who's acted, I can tell you, I give you a lot of credit because I don't know if I could switch up that much. I don't know if I get confused with all the roles.
Well, I get you. One time I was doing actually three movies at once, and I don't even know how that was possible, but that's the way it worked out. And I was going to Toronto, I mean, going to Vancouver from L.A. to shoot this movie called, a very dark movie, too, with John Dahl. It's called Unforgettable, and it starred Ray Liotta, and it was like...
Yes,
and
Linda Fiorentino.
Yeah, and then I was at the same time doing this, like, somewhat silly kids movie called House Arrest.
Yes, with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, Kevin Pollak, yeah, which was a complete 180. And then to mix everything up, I was doing this other TV movie at the same time. It was just nuts, and it was a, you know, scheduling nightmare, but we pulled it off. But I would tell you, and what's funny about those two movies you mentioned before is I was doing Celtic Pride in Boston. I swear to God, now this is another great story. I'm on the parquet floor for the Boston Garden.
Oh, yeah.
Before they tore the whole place down. I'm standing in the middle, and that's Red Auerbach comes out to me. He goes, "Kid, you're pretty good. You want to smoke?" Gives me a cigar. Now, he's the only one allowed to smoke in the building, and we smoke cigars standing on the parquet floor talking about basketball and how I was a huge fan of his. And it was one of the nicest moments. And, you know, and then, you know, all the players would come back and pay homage to him, and I would be there, and it was, you know, it's pinch me time. Another great thing that happened, but these are the side stories you don't get. But I was doing a movie with a friend. He said, "Come on, do this, play the part opposite Daryl Hannah in a movie called Grumpy Old Men."
Yes,
Jack Lemmon,
it.
Walter Matthau. So after I do my couple of scenes with Jack, he goes, "Kid, you're pretty good. Why don't you come up and join us for dinner tonight?" So it's me again, Kevin Pollak again, and Daryl Hannah and Walter and Jack in their hotel rooms, which they had. I believe they took the wall down in between. I swear to God, they made it a huge suite. It's like their 13th movie together. And they would regale us with stories from, you know, 50 years of filmmaking. And it was, talk about rare air. That was like, oh, my God, this is the best life ever.
Yeah, so, that's why you know you had a good life, because I'm extremely jealous of you. I'm sure Lee is.
Oh, yes.
Steve. I mean, I don't know what I'm more jealous of, though. Dinner with Matthau and Lemon and just hanging out. Or Red Auerbach. Ah, that's a tough one. Because Red Orbit, how many other people probably smoked with him on that floor, Chris? Not many.
I would say you can count them on one hand.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And what a great guy. What a wonderful guy he was. Couldn't have been nicer.
Did you meet any of the golf pros on the set of Happy Gilmore?
Yeah, we had Mark Lye, I think is his name, was a golf pro, and we didn't see the other guys. You know, they would do cutaways. The other guys, they were at different tournaments, and they just sneak out. But Mark Lye was terrific. He was like my coach, because all we did between setups was chip and putt and you know, swing the club for 10 hours a day for 3 months. So my game got sick at that time, but I started out and I wasn't very good, but I was really determined to look like a great golfer. So when Adam Sandler was hitting those little whipple ball things, he wasn't really hitting anything. They painted it, but I really had to stroke those balls. And then of course, as soon as I did that, they go, "All right, now that was great, but this one you got to drop it into the lake if you can." And that's it's hard to. If you really want to make it, I mean, I tried doing it a couple of times, and then they run a stunt guy in, because you have to chip it in such a way that it goes straight up and right into the water, and then I get frustrated. But the other great thing about Happy Gilmore was they said, "Happy makes a 30-foot putt. Shooter misses a 7-foot putt." So the best way for me to try to miss the 7-foot putt was to try to make it, lift it out. And I kept on putting him in. I said, "Guys, I'm sorry. I'll just, I'll miss the next one." And two or three takes later, we had enough that was good. We move on. So we get to the final part of the movie, and I said, "Please let me sink this one. I don't want that shot to be like." And even though it wasn't on a golf course, it was in a botanical garden in Canada. Give me like 10 shots at it. All right, that's it. Remember, and if we can't get it, we'll do the cutaway that you hit the ball and then you cut away with the hole and the ball rolls in, which I think looks crappy. But so I could see the betting that was going on that afternoon was insane. People go, "Shorty, you suck. You can't do it." And the other people, that's what the character was. Nobody wanted me. Everybody wanted Happy to win. But when the crew started betting for me, it was phenomenal. So the reaction you see in that movie when I make that, it's the 7th putt. That it, you know, the 35-foot putt, whatever it was. And it went in, and it was like, oh, my God. And that was the exact reaction that stayed in the movie, is me making that, knowing that all those guys that were betting for me, I came through, and all the people that were betting against me were like,
"You were
choke on that, sucker." Yeah, it's funny.
Is that when you did the twirl with the gun?
Really. I mean, that was so sick. I mean, the character's name Shooter, so I figured I had to come up with something. So I just started gunning all the balls when I put it in. And it's like making that silly putt after they were throwing the beach balls out there. That was pretty sick. It's all like we just grab what we can, and then just crazy stuff would happen on the set, little lucky accidents, and I think that made the movie a lot better.
So are you a good golfer, though, Chris? Are you any good?
I have shots. I've got some skills. Do I put them all together? Not really, because I don't play enough. But when I play tournaments, it's always great to be invited to these things where you're raising money for a children's charity or children's hospital or something like that. And it's a scramble. So that's when I can turn my game up. I'll have a freaking awesome drive, and then, we'll duff the second shot. But then I'll make the 15-foot putt that, gives us the birdie, that kind of stuff. So that's the way I play golf now. I'm not a serious golfer because it takes too many hours out of the day, and I'm thank God I'm gainfully employed and keeping my nose to the grindstone.
There's so much to talk about with you, though, too, and I also want advice from you. There's so much. There was a period of time, it hits 2000, and I got to tell you, Chris, you did, four three-and-a-half to four-star movies in a row. You did Iron Giant. You did Requiem for a Dream, The Perfect Storm, and you won all in a year.
Yeah, it was a good year. That was a good year. That was, but you never know. You never know. Each one, you could have been that in any of the years, but that was a particularly good string of them.
It's a good run. That's a good run. Yeah. I mean, even at that time, you work with Craig T. Nelson on The Skulls. I mean, you did a movie with, Bette Midler at that time.
Isn't she great? Shot that in Montreal, which was a great town. If you get a chance, go to Montreal.
Yeah, I'd love to. I heard it's expensive, other than that, though.
It's pricey, but it is Europe, right across the border. That's what it is. It's basically Europe right in North America. Fantastic.
Now, Did you have to audition for The Perfect Storm, or did you just drop George Clooney's name at the door?
Yeah, exactly. No, actually, they just came to me, and it was very nice. And I had to work on this is typical of what happens from time to time, Murphy's Law and all that.
Yep.
I was working on another series called Family Law, working with the great Paul Haggis, and he was directing it. And man, it was literally, I had to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was 3 o'clock. We weren't done shooting the other, what we had, you know, what happens, you start on Monday at 6, and then by the time it's Friday, it'll start till 1 in the afternoon because days get longer and it's turnaround for the actors and all that stuff. So here it is, 3 in the morning. I still have to finish this scene and then show up at the studio to do all my, you know, my weatherman stuff. It's one of those crazy things. But God loved it. That was a great experience. That movie was probably one of the highest grossing movies ever made.
Yeah.
I ever made it.
That's
and a great. The only one didn't get wet. But I walked over to the studio. They shot it on Warner Brothers and over 4 stages. And I'll never forget. I walked in to meet the director, and they had this boat. I mean, I want to tell you, it was a 3/4 size of the shrimp boat or the fishing boat on big gimbals, which means big cable on either end, pulling it up and down in a vast pool of seawater with helicopter on a soundstage, which is unheard of. My mouth was agape. So they had these big ridders, which are these huge fans, blowing, making torrential hurricane-like winds. And it was one of those things, an option! The amount of people that were in it, it was one of those phenomenal Hollywood make-believe moments that looked so good in the movie. Yeah, great movie.
That's a Georgie Clooney's movie. They pull out all the stops for the GC.
Yeah, GC is not doing too bad, is he?
He's
great guy too.
I was going to bring up Family Law. You got to work with one of my favorites, so I'm just hoping you can confirm. Tony Dan's a great guy.
Great guy, energy of 9 people, total alpha male. He is something else. He's a character, and I miss him because he's a lot of fun to work with. But
yeah,
he is a guy who's a can-do guy.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's terrific. And I like to see him doing more stuff now. I think he's probably got something. Sitting on something coming out big right now. But that's the way he is. He can't sit still. He's like me. Got to keep it going. So I love him,
and I'm hoping. Did he have any? Was his name Tony on the show, or did he have
no,
any?
That's,
learning his
that's
new.
Why that's why I only did 3 seasons. If his name was Tony, we'd be like in syndication now with 150 episodes.
Did you have to elbow him every time you said his character's name? I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I have to keep eye contact with him all the time, so you know you're talking to him. Sometimes I just go, "That's right, Tony." Like that, so that you just throw a Tony out of the side, and he'd perk right up.
Well,
he's gonna kill me if you listen to this.
I wanted to also bring up, you did great work with Billy Crystal, directing you. Mel Allen, how is it to play Mel Allen, who's known by all in New York where you're from? So you probably idolized this guy in a way. And how
I did
someone you love.
That was another challenge because you want to, you know, everybody knew him, and I knew him growing up, and my mother was a huge baseball fan, so she knew him. You have a responsibility as an actor to do justice to this man. So that was another great thing. Billy, I saw him at a awards festival. He goes, "Kid, I'm thinking about you for this part. You'll be great." And he told me Mel Allen. I went, "Oh my God, yeah." I think he thought of me because he saw me in Quiz Show doing a very good Jack Barry. So. But he came in, and but then again, this is another funny story. So I got the booth and doing that stuff. We would ad lib, we'd do like all that kind of stuff. Phil Rizzuto and all the guys calling the games, and it was fantastic. And I got his accent down. He's an Alabama boy, and but I had another movie to do right after that with Bill Murray. I think it was called
Broken Flowers.
Broken Flowers, right? With Jarmusch. I think it was the movie. But I had grown this little pencil mustache, which was completely opposite of what Mel Allen would have. But the timing got changed because one of the actresses, so I had to go in like 3 weeks early. So I had to shave that off. That was just a pity because you can't. I could have worn a fake one, but it wouldn't have been as good. Anyway, long story short is I loved playing that, and a lot of people see that movie because it was Billy's childhood dream come true to talk about Maris and Mantle, and that year 61 with the asterisk. And it was It was phenomenal. And then we shot it in beautiful places. And then I got a chance of doing the same baseball thing to come back years later and play Joe D in his Mr. Coffee years. That was really fun in the Bronx is Burning,
mm-hmm.
which is another great movie. So
I got
baseball in my past.
I have one, two, three little things to talk to you about here. And then I'm going to talk about Harry's Law. And Harry's Law premieres tomorrow night, Wednesday night. I believe it's at 8 p.m. Central time out by us. So it's
good.
9 p.m. Eastern.
9 o'clock West Coast. Yeah, right.
Yep. Chris, you did two more of my favorite shows, Las Vegas and Sopranos. And you got to work with Jimmy Woods. Jimmy Kahn. I saw Jimmy Woods movie this weekend,
yeah.
Straw Dogs. That's why I was saying Jimmy Woods. Jimmy Kahn. And on Sopranos, do you have any stories from those two sets? That's what I'm looking for here. I have no question. Let's not get crazy.
All right. I got a great story from Jimmy Kahn because he's very much like Tony Danza. He is an ex-boxer. He's a tough guy. He's got the energy of nine people. Super nice guy. And he says, ain't a great kid. I get to hit you and knock you out here a little bit. You know, cause here I'm 6'3", and he's, 5'9". In life, it wouldn't happen, but he's a tough bastard. He really is. He's a very, very sharp, tough guy. And he beat the living hell out of me. I remember that. But I had the most delicious part. It was called Belinda's Box, I believe. It was a two-episode arc, I think. And I kidnapped his daughter and kept her in a box underground with an air hole. And if he didn't give me the money in time, hey, she dies. And the dialogue written by the two Cullen brothers who I'd worked with before, they wrote it with me in mind because they knew I was a sick bastard. And I had more fun doing that. But working with Jimmy, he's a tough son of a bitch. He caught me one time in the solar plexus, and I went down. And then I knew I had to stick my hand into the trunk of the car if they have a piece of wood that blocks it so it doesn't come down, cut your fingers off. And he slammed that sucker down like there was no tomorrow, and I was just thankful. God, that my hand was in the right spot. Had it been like 3 inches to the right, I would have lost two fingers.
Well, he's
it was
method.
Crazy.
You don't fuck around.
Well, he is method, and that's what makes him so watchable. He talk about commitment. He goes for it. He sees red, and he was seeing red on my ass. It was pretty funny. it was a great experience. To this day, I see him give him a big hug, and he's always very kind. Genuine guy. I really like him. So.
He's the best. What about Sopranos, though? It was one of the funnier episodes of the show where the movie Cleaver comes out.
Yeah.
And we find out
exactly. It's
not Tony.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. I went into that show, and it was an impossible audition to get. And I had to audition for that show because, A, I'm not in New York. B, they know me out here in Hollywood, but they don't know me in New York. It's sort of very cliquey in New York. So it was Georgiana Walken, which is Christopher Walken's wife, was a casting director. I dropped her a note. I said, if there's anything comes up, I want this, Jimmy Gandolfini's an old friend of mine. I did a couple of movies with him. So I really wanted to be on the show and do something cool. They had just finished this great arc with Tim Daly, where he played Christopher's, the sponsor, AA sponsor. And so they killed him. He's dead now, so they need another one, somebody else. I said, oh, this would be great. So she was like, she came out and she gave me like this, like, don't play it this way. Play it safe, but don't play it like, I was like, wow, it's just not a huge part or anything. I think my gut instinct as an actor, I think I'll know how to pull this off. So I go and I'm sitting down. It's rare. I'm sitting there. There's David Chase right next to me and the director and her and two other writers. And I read it, and David Chase, God bless him, he goes like this. That was really good. Try something for me. Try like, you want to drink so bad right now. And this is great direction. You want to drink, you can taste it. So while you're telling him, to hang on because it's very hard out there. Not only is it very hard, but if he would say, I just want one more, you would go, okay, let's go get a drink. Kind of like that, you know what I mean? It was a great piece of direction, and I did it like that. And he said, I've never seen an actor turn around like 180 like that. That was just great. And Georgiana looked at her and she was wonderful. So it was going to be like three or four things, but they shot one and then they ran out of time and blah, blah, blah. So I already did the one. But I had a blast. And then I just worked with David Chase again in his new movie.
Yeah.
His movie is called the Untitled David Chase movie, which I hear is terrific. It's about his life growing up in Jersey. And he wants to be a rock star in the 60s.
That's great. I love how it's called the Untitled David Chase movie.
Yeah. It'll be called the Twilight Zones or something, but it's a really, really cool movie.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up then Harry's Law. Here we go. Harry's Law, because I could talk to you for hours, Chris, but I don't want to keep you around. But I'll have you back sometime, hopefully.
Oh, good. I hope so. Thanks.
But Harry's Law, okay. Now, is this something that David E. Kelly goes, I want Chris McDonald, you come on in, it's a recurring role, and now all of a sudden he's like, all right, he plays a great foil to Kathy Bates, and he's just great to work with, keep him around. Or how does this work, that you're now brought back as a regular?
That's half true. What happened was this. I wish it was David Kelly going, oh, Chris McDonald, he'd be great. But it was basically our casting director, who was just said, there's like, I don't know, it was like three people can do justice to this. Probably Craig Bierko could have been really good, as I think about it, off the top of my head, because we're just talking about him. But
don't make suggestions.
No, none of that. So anyway, he calls my agent. My agent says, "Wow, if, you know, as a guest star, you know, Chris is really he's doing a lot of movies now. I don't know if he'll do it. I'll bring it to him." I was doing a kids movie in Albuquerque at the time called Lemonade Mouth for Disney, which turned out to be this big movie for Disney Channel, and. Every once in a while, I throw something in so my young kids can see what Daddy does and not watch, you know, Requiem for a Dream. You know what I mean? So I was doing this movie, and they had dyed my hair blonde because I didn't want to look like too much like a villain. I was the principal of the high school, blah, blah, blah. So, but I had a blast. I was a terrific director, and I come back. And the day before I come back, I get this call. David Kelly, I said, enough said, done, I'll do it. I love him, and I'm a huge fan of Boston Legal and all that stuff. Anyway. I mean, I'm a fan of him since Picket Fences. I mean, my God, he's the best. So then I look at the material, and it's like, oh, my God, this guy's a freight train. He is so freakishly funny. And I never judge the characters I play, but this guy was a piece of work. So I had to learn to embrace him and see where he was coming from. And our great executive producer, Bill D'Elia, who's been working with David for years, he goes, well, whatever happens, I have to direct this Tommy Jefferson when he comes in because that is going to be a great part. And I guess I embraced it. I mean, the way David wrote, I thought, oh, my God, this is a gift. So the long story short is I was supposed to do two, maybe three. He loved it. He kept writing for me every week. It was something else better. He says, all right, good. And then, you know, NBC was just taken over by Comcast, and he would have loved to have made me a series regular last season, but it wasn't enough to get in from the network and blah, blah, blah. So when he offered it to me this year, and it's been terrific. It's one of the great parts I've had in my life.
Yeah.
And seriously, it's when he writes, and sometimes you're light in an episode, sometimes you do some heavy lifting. So my big episode's coming, and I'm sure it's going to be killer.
Your character is very addictive, and the way you pull. You just have this charm about you, Chris, where you could play an asshole or you could play a hero, and people are very connected to you because you're charming. You're charming either way. Not a rich man's wife. Not Rick.
The guy you love to hate. Yeah.
But
I hear you. Thank you. That's very kind.
You're not the greatest guy. You're kind of a. Would you say you're a little airheaded in this role to a degree?
Yeah, I don't have a. I mean, I'm all full of braggadocio. It's all like I've had some things, and I pick up a script for the new week, and I go, really? Is that where Tommy Jefferson's going this week? So funny. We did this one episode about albinos, and I couldn't look at them. But you know, they need representation. So they would give me reasons to come in and work with Harry, Kathy Bates. So I had to come and get her her help because you know it's not their fault. It's my fault. I can't really look at them. It was the funniest. The more real you play it, the crazier it is. I mean, because life is crazier than it's crazier than fiction.
Yeah.
And David would wrote these jewels, and I would laugh until I got out of my system. And then I would just try to do it as straight as I could. But thank you. The thing about playing bad guys, and I do prefer if I, you know, people ask me, wow, you're very memorable as a bad guy. I played them all. I played everything, which is a beautiful. I played the whole variety of parts, and I do love them all. But I must say, bad guys are a lot of fun.
Yeah,
they're the juiciest parts. You get to eat a little scenery. You get to really like, you know, vent, and they're just a joy to do and a joy to watch. Sometimes it's, you know, a little hard, but I really love doing it. And people really respond to it, so it's the fact that I don't really judge them. I just kind of find where they're coming from, and they just kind of play the heck out of that.
I believe being a bad guy is kind of like psychiatric soup for the soul, because you get to kind of vent, you get to kind of let it all out.
Yeah, you do, and it's and there's no reason why you shouldn't. I mean, you really got to commit to it and just let it rip, because if you're on the fence about it, like it becomes all boring, and you don't want that, because it's a great opportunity to just let it go. It just feeds the story. Every story needs a bad guy, or you have no conflict, and then the story would suffer. So the more you can bring to it, the more that the lead guys can react to you, because you're just like a force of nature, and I think that's very attractive for an actor.
Chris, would you mind taking a couple studio or audience questions before I let you go?
Not at all. Let's do it.
Okay, but real quick before that, I want to talk about this David Chase movie I just looked at. Listen to this cast.
Gandolfini's in it.
Gandolfini. Yeah. Brad
Pitt.
Chris McDonald. Those are your leads. That's a great play.
Yeah, baby.
That's a great
play. You know, Jack Houston, you know him from, he's the guy with the mask in Boardwalk Empire.
Yes, and right. Also, how's he related to Angelica?
I think he's her son.
Son?
I may be wrong.
I think you may be right. I get her and her brother confused with the kids, her and John.
Yeah, what's the other? Danny Houston. That's
Danny,
brother,
that's
right?
Danny's the brother.
Danny Houston,
and
right.
John,
right.
Yes, but I get confused with her and her brother and who has what kid.
John's his
grandson. I don't think Danny has a son as old as Jack is. That's what I'm thinking, and I didn't ask him this question. I just saw him the other night also, but I haven't. My character doesn't work with him enough. I do. That's why I think I have two of the greatest gigs right now. Doing Harry's Law, playing Tommy Jefferson, is one of the big thrills. And then playing Harry Doherty on Boardwalk Empire when we're in hiatus for Harry's Law is the gift. I did four more this season, so I'm just thrilled.
Oh, you're back on the Boardwalk Empire, huh? That's
back awesome. Doing the Boardwalk, which is
arguably
the best show. It's
I have
show.
Not watched
great
it yet.
Writing.
It's very good. Matt is wrong to watch it.
I have Sopranos withdrawal. We've gone through this.
Yes.
I can't watch. It took me forever to get into Mad Men because of Matthew Weiner. I have Sopranos withdrawal. Bruce Fretz twisted my arm the other day. TV Guide, cheers and jeers. Twisted my arm and said, I have to watch Boardwalk Empire, or else I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. So I'm going to start watching it this weekend.
You'll like it. You'll like it
now.
You'll like it. You'll like it a lot. Yeah, Marty just picked up the trophy for best direction of the pilot, which I thought was spectacular. But it is cinematic. It is truly not television. It's really HBO. It's unbelievable what they do with the attention to detail on that show is insane. I would get these suits made for my character, a place called Sid Greenfield or something, and it's in a little nondescript kind of a schleppy neighborhood in Brooklyn. You walk up these two flights of this dingy place, and it's worker bees making this most beautiful period suits. Unbelievable. I mean, this guy's, dressed presidents, and he's got, pictures of presidents and thank you notes from, legendary people around the world, luminaries, because he's such a great craftsman. So you start with a wardrobe like that, and you put these clothes on, with these really difficult collars, by the way, to put on, and then that also just feeds your character. Amazing. And then you go to the sets. They don't spare a dime in the show. They just do it right.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, I do want our audience to know, too, you're doing a movie with a couple guys I know, Marcus Dunstan and Patrick Melton, that's in post. That's my friend Jeff Shapiro's ex-roommate. Those are two very cool guys. They're great guys. A horror movie, though, Chris.
I know. Listen, like I say, I like to do it all. These are very talented men, though. I want to tell you, this movie, the collection is going to be sick.
Well, they're the guys who did a bunch of the Saw sequels, so our people know.
Yeah.
They wrote a bunch of the Saw sequels, and then they won the last Project Greenlight. I forget the name of their film, but
That's right.
Feast 1, 2, and 3, actually. So there's that. Okay, but the collection, we'll expect that. But Lee Cabreas, let's get to you first. Do you have a couple questions for Chris or any comments?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've really worked with a lot of very idiosyncratic filmmakers, like a lot of people who had very specific visions, like Robert Rodriguez. I'll listen for the people.
Yes.
Robert Rodriguez, Robert Redford, Darren Aronofsky, Wolfgang Peterson, Jim Jarmusch, so many. And hopefully you could talk about some of your experiences with those types of filmmakers.
Well, what's great about those kind of filmmakers is they don't over-direct. They're 90% of, they say, is in the casting. And so when they lock onto you, they give you freedom as an artist to do your contribution. And it's very collaborative. So it's a joy to work with them because they are, first of all, a big fan because they've hired you. And they give you that, you know, that step up that you have confidence when you step onto the set. And it's, I tell you, I got more great response. Even for Jim Jarmusch, for example, he goes, Chris, when I was looking at the dailies, what you did, it's so subtle, but what you had to do, you had to watch Bill basically lusting after his ex-girlfriend, who is now your wife, and just be really cool about that, and then kind of like uneasy about it, at the same time never saying anything about it. He said the subtext was visceral, and I thank you for that, because I don't know if I even saw it while you were doing it. But so that kind of stuff makes you feel good, and just, you know, great visionaries like Robert Rodriguez. My God,
yeah.
Man is he's got his own studio in Austin. He's just he's one of a kind. He is what? Truly one of a kind. Great story.
Spy Kids too, actually, which a lot of people
he's a great guy to have on the show, by the way, because he's A, very very smart and very funny, and B, he's got a great story. I mean, literally got his money for the first movie to do his first by giving, you know. Taking a good experiment, like giving blood and then taking this stuff. And what are you going to do with your money? One guy goes, I'm buying a Trans Am, man. He said, well, what are you doing? I'm going to make movies. Yeah, your ass, make movies. And look at him now. It's unbelievable. So,
yeah, and he's another nine people energy type guy. I mean, talks and talks and full of ideas and all that, yeah.
Yeah, the passion that comes out of these people, it's just, it's infectious. And it really makes for a great movie making.
Well, what I think you do really well is you have to do a lot of scenes with actors that are doing really, you know, very, you know, big, intense sort of scenes. And it's, I think, as hard to be the person that's reacting and dealing with that, like you said, with Bill Murray, than it is to be these sort of big, huge sort of roles, like playing alongside Ellen Burstyn in that movie, which is a very intense role for her in Requiem.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, what was it like working with her?
Well, I had nothing but respect for her. This woman is one of iconic, but and she's done so many brilliant roles over the years, and she's probably got 3 Oscars at home, and you know, nominated for another 4. She's one of those really raw, wonderful, gifted, method actors. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had to kiss her. I mean, she said, I've never done the French kissing on screen before, and there I am. I'm this guy who's, you know, working for my, you know, 5 days on the movie, and it was kind of an interesting and awkward morning, but as soon as the cameras roll, everything is, any kind of inhibition is gone.
Yeah.
And you just play the part, and you play with reckless abandon, which she did. She was robbed. That was the year she was up, and Julia Roberts, who was deserving in her own right, but if you put two of those performances side by side, there's no question that the performance was Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
She's just brilliant.
She was amazing in that.
You want to get Steve? Steve, do you have a question for Chris?
I do. Hello, Chris. How you doing? First.
How you doing, man?
Steve Weirich, my writing partner. Go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Thanks for calling into the show first and foremost. It's been an awesome time. But
thanks, man.
Yeah, my question for you is, do you have any experiences that stand out on Dirty Work? Because let me tell you, if I was old enough to work on that set, I'd be there and I'd do whatever they need.
For free.
Yeah, for free. Absolutely. I would scrape shit off the ground for free to be on that set. Like, whatever Bobby Saget wants to do, you know, I'd be doing it.
That's pretty funny. Well, you know that it was Bob directed it, you know.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he is... You would think he was playing the father of these, you know, cute little girls on the show all those years with, you know, John Stamos. And he is one of the funniest people I have met on this planet. He is so funny. So he would, my only reaction to that would be the way they would set shots up and they would do it. And then they just, Bob say, let's tweak it. And I swear to God, the ones that he would just go in there and just, you know, add a little element or something, like in a big stew, just add some more pepper, more spice, and that would be the thing that would make Norm MacDonald and And what was the other actor's name? He's so funny.
Artie Lang?
Artie Lang, yeah. Just, you know, especially Artie Lang would tweak it up. It was so funny. I remember working, you know, that was the first time I worked with Chevy Chase in that movie, and Chevy was in a different space at that time. Now he's the sweetest, kindest man in the world, but he was like, you know, maybe bitter, party of one. And he was not kind to a lot of people. But I just kind of broke through that because I know, you know, crazy. This man was, you know, he was the number one actor in the 80s. And here he was, you know, doing a little bit, basically playing himself in his movie. So I don't think he was really thrilled about it. But to take him aside and talk to him to feel what a great guy he is. And he really is a great guy. Little things like that are little breakers. Oh, and Jack Warden. Remember Jack Warden?
Jack Warden. I was going to ask about Jack Warden. Did he ever, I don't know, was he playing himself in that flick, or what's the deal with that?
No, he was playing what he does, you know, that was his money part. I mean, the curmudgeonly old, you know, the grandpa with a heart of gold. But what he did was he invited me to his trailer, and I offered to, you know, run lines with him because he was getting up in those years, and I was running, but it was the beautiful thing. We'd do it once or twice, and then we'd sit and talk for 40 minutes. And what, I mean, it's something people don't do on the set right now, I'll be honest with you. Everybody's got their iPhones or their, you know, Blackberries. And as soon as they say cut, boom, right to their computer phones.
Yeah.
Nobody talks. It's disgusting.
Leave it in the car.
I mean, when I direct, I'm going to have them barred from the set, I swear to God. Because all the way down, and they got people like, and you're done. And they sit down and they look for that pair of stockings they wanted on, you know, on eBay. It's crazy. So, and they're so distracting, but, you know, what they're missing out on is working with wonderful, seasoned actors who have been doing it for 50 years. And I love that. I love sitting and talking to them. They just couldn't be nicer. And I've gotten gems from these older character actors that I've loved for years. So,
well, Chris, before I let you go, I want to read you what people are saying about you on Twitter. Your episode of Psych, they want you to know, is awesome. Great episode.
Wow.
Chris Campbell 8. There is another person that I.R. Adams says, is Christopher McDonald everyone's movie dad? Holy cow.
I love it.
Someone else says they love you on Psych and on Harry's Law. Christopher McDonald and his narcissistic ways. Ha, just love it. Great shows. And someone wanted you to know they're watching Happy Gilmore and they're pumped that you're in the movie and they love you. I would love to. We're moving to LA in a month, Chris, and I'd love to get you to come sit in on a show. I think we should get you and Larry Poindexter together, and then tell some stories. I'll call up Larry. We'll get him in. We'll get him together. We'll get you two together and tell stories. I don't know if we can get Clooney, but we'll get you two.
We'll get that act to come. He'll be a little busy, I think.
Do you have any advice for the move to L.A. with the me wanting to act and write and Steve wanting to write and Lee wanting to do comedy? Any advice?
Well, first of all, kudos to you for doing it, because guess what? Ain't going to happen where you are. You've got to come to the town where they get her done. And it's a sacrifice. I would rather live in Chicago. I'd rather live in New York.
Me too.
It's L.A. L.A. is where the work is. And if you want to get it done and really, you know, kick yourself for the rest of your life if you don't do it. But when you come out here, you can't be like the party dude scenes. I live out of town, and when I come into town, I really work hard. And I was talking to this was 20 years ago when I moved out of town. I live up on a lake in the San Bernardino Mountains. And I keep a little kid there in downtown Los Angeles, but when I'm in town, I don't sit in front of the TV that night. I go up, there's a little something, you do, you know, the schmooze thing, but you work, and then when you leave, you forget it. You leave it behind so that you have a real life, because it could be all-consuming and burn you out. Or at the same time, if you're down here and everybody else is doing what you're doing, it's very creative. You could be with like other people that are like, phenomenally talented. They got a lucky break doing this, doing that, and I mean the idea is bouncing back and forth. It's as good a time as any to be here. So I would say I look forward to seeing you guys coming out and chasing that dream, because this is where it gets done.
Well, I look forward to seeing you too. I'm a Kenosha guy myself. If I was going to be personally happy, it'd be in Kenosha, Wisconsin. If I'm professionally happy, it's got to be out there. Right now, I'm in my mother's basement. Not a happy medium.
Well, my gotta get out of the basement, man.
Well, I'm like, do I have my mother? She wanted to talk to you, but I'm not going to let her call in because she gets a little rowdy sometimes with our guests.
She does.
And maybe we'll save that for LA. Yeah. We'll save that for your LA.
Good.
You're meeting my mother.
I love it.
You'd love her.
But Chris, oh, she is the best. She's like Doris Roberts and Everybody Loves Raymond. Very compelling.
I love her. Yeah, sure. That's great. But, hey, I'm really happy for you guys making a move. You say next month or next week? Or
November 1st. I'll be in town October 6th to 10th to pick out a place. I got a couple of lunches I have planned and stuff. So if you want to go grab a beer, let me know. But, November
1st. Okay.
November 1st is the move. And are you directing a movie, Chris? Is that what I'm hearing, too, real quick?
I am. Now, see, the thing is, I've done so many independent films, and I have said to myself, man, get in control and do one. I found a script 2 years ago now in Sundance called Wildwood Inn. It is a beautiful story. It is a simple story. It is something I really respond to. I've had money fall out four times now. Four times. Tough time to make a movie. You need a couple million bucks because the economy ain't that great, as you know. But still, I feel hopeful that I'll get it done this spring, maybe, or maybe in the summer, maybe next fall. Who knows?
Well,
but I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
If you need someone on the set to help you out for free, I'll be there for you. As long as
you're a good man.
If I'm not working, I'm there for free for you, Chris. You're a great guy. You've been one of my favorite guests. Thank you for the positive inspiration.
Yeah, really.
I have close friends out there that tell us, well, it's pretty shitty out here. Yeah. I'm like, well, thanks. Can't wait to see you.
It depends on your outlook and how you get it done. I had a manager just tell me, go to the beach, get some sun. And I said, you look at the wrong guy. That's not what I'm doing. That's not how I roll. So, if you get out what you put into it, that's all I'm saying. This is a great place to do it because there's so many brilliant minds out here.
Chris McDowell, you're the fucking man.
I
cannot wait to see you when we're out there. Can't wait to have you.
Thanks,
on.
Boys. I look forward to it. And thanks so much for having me on your show. And
thank you.
Yeah,
Harry. I'll be happy to do it when you get out. Yeah, Harry's Law tomorrow night.
Law Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. Please, please, please watch it. It's a great show, actually. Very good. Very good.
All right, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right,
thanks,
talk to you later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Care, all right,
bye-bye. That's good times.
Good times.
You know,
Chris McDonald.
Chris McDonald.
Thank you.
Keep it going.
Thank you.
Wow.
They love Chris. They love them.
Standing? Now you're standing?
Chris is actually hanging up the phone now and walking away. He has his hand in the air.
This is just unbelievable.
Wow. Okay. So.
That died out quickly.
Well, you know
the very
audience.
There. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
They all run out of gas at the same time.
Yeah.
Those guys. Mikey.
I just want to say I'm in a complete shock. I knew how much I love this guy and forgot how much I love this guy until halfway through the interview. You realize he is like the
Poindexter guy.
Oh,
that guy's nobody. That Poindexter,
Larry Poindexter. Come on, but I'm just saying, Shooter
that?
McGavin.
Whoa! What's Larry Poindexter? Come on.
I said he. No, I'm not saying.
Oh, that's
bad
love
way.
For Larry.
Saying,
okay.
Yeah, it's love for Larry.
Okay, I got.
I just
because Larry's my guy.
Shooter, you realize Shooter McGavin's like half the reason I took up the sport of golf.
You know what? I don't doubt it.
I mean, I remember watching him because we're that same generation.
So that you could be mean to...
So he could buy old ladies' homes and put them in the retirement home. That's why I got into golf.
You know what's funny? Is as a kid watching that movie, every time I'd see Chris and something else, I go, hey, it's Shooter. I love this guy.
And I did that too.
Kind of, it was just kind of it was snowball. And I just love his persona, his voice. And, just
and how about that resume?
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable.
How many great movies?
Unbelievable.
And I think when you're working with Terrence Winter on Boardwalk Empire and Marty Scorsese, and you're working with David Chase, and you're doing a David Chase movie,
yeah.
The first thing he's done since The Sopranos,
right.
I think you got to kind of sit back and go, Chris McDonald's a big fucking deal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested in that movie, Twilight Zones, with a Y in the Twilight.
Yeah. I mean, but how crazy is that? Working right now with David E. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Full-time gig there. Then he's doing David Chase, and then he
TV's biggest Davids.
Yeah, and then he's got all the Davids. He's got the Davids cornered. He needs to be on Curb, and then he'd have it all.
Yeah, right.
But he's great. He's great. How about that streak? Requiem for a Dream, Perfect Storm, 61. The guy was on a roll.
I will say I liked what he told us at the end. A lot of guests have given us some notes about moving and about going into the business. Generally, it's all been helpful. It hasn't always been positive.
Steve and I, we actually were talking earlier this week, if Steve, you could speak about this real quickly. We were talking earlier this week about people who are genuinely our friends.
Yeah.
People we've had on this show, who I speak to on a regular basis, that they want to give you the bad, so they don't feel responsible for you coming out there and expecting anything.
Right.
But
absolutely.
This is the first time I've ever heard real positive in reinforcement.
Right. Yeah. Just work hard.
So I got
people.
Your point there,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I know. That was... Sorry.
We both speak.
I just had one. What was shocking to me is a man that good-looking just wants to work all the time.
How great is that? That's a great line.
Yeah.
Because all Steve and I do is work on this fucking show.
Yeah.
If people want to know what we were going through with this editing that we're doing at the moment for these videos. I mean, this is like 12, 16-hour days we're doing here. And I got to tell you, it's great reinforcement to also hear, look, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. Right. So if you work all the time, you go to a million auditions, you write, you have 30, 40 scripts. What'd Rock Rubin say to me privately?
18.
Write as much as you can. He said he had a friend who wrote,
scripts.
I don't know if Rock will kill me for telling this story, but Rock said he had a friend who wrote two scripts and thought he was going to get, you know, famous.
Mm-hmm.
Two scripts. Two comedies that are sitcoms, not even a movie. Or I think he said he had a movie and a sitcom. Okay. Then he had a friend who had 18 scripts and wrote every day. Who got the job? Who's the one working on a hit television show now? The 18 scripts.
And one other thing he added, and I just got to put this as the exclamation point to it. The guy with two scripts, and people can't fall into this attitude, the guy with two scripts that people
thought he was good enough.
Thought people were against him. Do not think people are against you or else you're in trouble. Just always trying to improve. And I think that's what Rock was telling everyone.
Yes.
Or at least you, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mike Royce tells me all the time, keep writing.
Yeah.
Right. Tolan. Right. When he's not calling me a cunt.
Right. correct. Or maybe he's telling you to write, you cunt. Maybe he's doing that.
Why you got to be such a not writing cunt?
How great would it be to get Larry and Chris on the show together?
That would be good.
Just let them talk.
Yeah.
I'd just hang up the mic.
I would just let them choose.
I'd just shut mine off. And just let them yap. Oh, yeah. About the days with Clooney,
Craig, Larry.
They could write a book. I should write that book.
The
Poindexter McDonald memoirs with Georgie Clooney.
Larry, Chris, and Clooney.
Oh, man. What a trio.
Larry, Chris, and Bjork.
I'm sorry. I know he's married. Two of these guys are married. George is still swinging.
Yeah.
But two of these guys are married with kids, so I know they're laying low on this. But you know they were nailing tons of fucking hot pussy.
All the time.
Every chick that walked into the YMCA while those three were shooting hoops took off their bra and panties at the door. Just dropped that. You know why
they stuck them to the wall?
They didn't have a janitor at the YMCA. Those floors were wet for another reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Those weren't wet janitor floors. Those were women just walking through the hallway.
They didn't need a hanger.
Watching the three of them play basketball. Those three are so amazing. They were probably beating three black guys at basketball every day. They probably had Dominique Wilkins and two other black
James
guys.
Worthy.
Name some black guys for me. Clyde Drexler.
James.
Horace Grant.
Yeah, they're beating them all. Horace Grant.
And Horace.
The Kimney Mutombo.
The Kempe Mutombo.
Detlef Schrempf.
My name is the Kempe Mutombo. You continue.
What's wrong with the Kempe Mutombo?
Oh, nothing's wrong with
Patrick
the Kempe Mutombo, Mikey. Oh, Lauren Michaels.
They were probably beating Manute Bol, and he's 7'6".
I was asking Steve yesterday, I'm like, should I do my Lauren Michaels impression if I ever get called into an SNL audition?
Is he funny?
Welcome to the audition, Matthew. Have my Indian style on a chair Indian style, going, welcome to the show. I don't know if you've seen it before. Look, you're no Will Ferrell. Willie Fares. You know he's got nicknames for everyone.
Yeah, right.
So. It's like Christina Faye and I, we worked very hard together.
No,
Bruce likes my Lauren Michaels
Will
quite
Ferrell's
a bit.
Billy. It's Billy Ferrell.
Yeah, I just think Bruce. Yeah, I think Bruce likes hearing shots taken.
Doesn't Lauren kind of talk like Ed Sullivan, like on our show?
Yes, he talks
for the show.
He talks. It's a little nasally.
Yeah,
but he talks very, very regal though. Oh. It's very regal.
But he does this with his O's, where it's like the show has this sort of talking.
Go ahead, Mikey.
I have a very Bush League question when it comes to SNL.
Yeah.
Okay. Lauren Michaels, does he actually write anything that's funny, or is he just kind of the congregator that put it all together?
He writes too. Well, he gets not. He calls himself a writer. I'm sure it's more congregator. He has a lot of jobs. I'm not bashing Lauren. I'm not going there.
Lauren. No, not at all.
There's nothing to bash. He has a lot of jobs. He is the show. He puts all the team together that does everything. So I mean, I'm sure he reviews everything before it goes to air. Actually, I know that for a fact he does. So I'm sure Lauren has. But I do want to compare impressions. Who does a better impression, Jimmy Fallon or me? And Jimmy Fallon does some good impressions. So I'm going to play Jimmy Fallon's impression of Lauren.
I was
going to
say, I haven't seen
it. Well, you know how I feel about
Jimmy
Fallon.
He's not Indian style already, though.
Yeah.
And you know how I feel about Jimmy Fallon.
I never realized how powerful.
He's talking to Jim Brewer.
Lord,
that's Jim Brewer.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because when I was there, he always gave great advice.
Smartest guy in the world.
Smartest guy in the world. Always give phenomenal advice, but I wouldn't get it until like months later.
Jim didn't get
way
a lot
down
of
the
things
road,
until
he would
months
go,
later.
Jim, you should try being a straight guy and maybe working more will.
I'm like, all right.
Just go in to the room and just
somebody walks you out of the office and just
with Steve he would
Steve's got this thing and he's gonna you and Tina and
you rock the show, man. You were great on this. And
who's this better?
Jimmy
Fallon.
You know I have a little bias.
Oh,
because
come on. My Lauren's way better.
Do you have Lauren on the sound bites there that we can?
Yeah, I can give you Lauren. I can give you the actual Lauren, Mike.
But sounds like you're about to. We're going to do the Monster Mash.
He does.
Our guest is Lauren Michaels. It's 1975, and NBC greenlights a new TV show.
Uh huh.
They call it NBC Saturday Night.
Uh huh. Right.
Okay, what was the basic concept? What did they want? Did they say what they were looking for? They said just give us something to fill that time on Saturday night.
Well, I guess that goes back to who they were. there was a young executive named Dick Ebersol, who'd worked with Bruce Arledge at ABC Sports and who came over to NBC to be the new director of Late Night. He and I had a bunch of meetings, and I sort of I'd been frustrated with the kind of shows that I've been doing. With,
mine's better. Thank you. Yeah. My Lauren is better.
Yeah, yours is a little slow.
Well, mine's more personal. Well, this is an interview show. He's prepped to talk fast.
Right.
But if you ever catch Lauren in like a off guard moment, he talks not as slow as Fallon was doing.
No.
But he talks slower and he does a lot of ums.
Considers his wording carefully.
That's a good one. Oh, here's a clip from him on Charlie Rose. Come on. On Christina Fey playing Sarah Palin.
The Tina thing was obvious, except you had to talk her into it.
There was a little of that, but I think the audience really just cast her in that part. And the great part about it was that just about everyone thought it was their idea.
No.
You know, like, from the...
You mean he did.
No. Just audience.
Oh, the audience
would just say, you know, that's... What a gift. You know, what?
Steve, who's the better Lauren?
Clearly,
here, Jimmy.
Not Jimmy.
That's all right.
For
I think
certainty.
Lauren does a very good impersonation of his former self.
I was going to say. But okay.
Yours ranks in between Lauren's and Jimmy.
Well, let's ask the audience. Who does the better impression? Jimmy Fallon? Well, okay. All right. He's got a good little show on NBC. He's got a good little show on
you
good
got
little late
so
night
riled.
Show. Or Matthew Aaron.
Well, it looks like we have a winner.
Jesus.
And the Emmy goes to...
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Calm down, people. That's too much.
Whew. Let me ask you a question.
Wow, thank you. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
Mikey.
I was thinking about this. What is it? Is there other than maybe being competition or something like this, is there a structural and purposely different purpose, I guess, if that made any sense?
Of?
Well, because there's Charlie Rose.
Yes.
And then there's the one with the guy with the goatee and the glasses that scares me.
Who's the one with the goatee and the guy in the glasses?
I think it's inside the Extra studio.
Oh, Jimmy Lipton, yes. Jimmy and I had dinner the other evening, and he ordered the souffle. Here's a James Lipton impression I love.
Hold on,
let me see if I can find it.
The James Lipton impression that I find the most endearing. All right, play it.
Well, here's your Will Ferrell one. You want to hear about Jimmy Lipton, though? This is the guy that scares you?
Live. And then divine inspiration hits you in the form of a night at the Roxbury.
That's pretty good. But here's the real James Lipton.
I want to know where you acquired that pitch-perfect Gregory House speech.
I want to know where... He doesn't do Lauren. That's Lauren doing James. That's my James Lipton.
There's a funny David Cross story about how he was working with him on Arrested Development.
Distinguished.
Where he was on, James Lipton, where he played an overacting prison guard. He took a Cable Ace Award for the show, and like he gave this speech, and I saw the video of it. Like he was crying and mentioning his wife, like, I must thank my wife. She is the one light in my universe.
Yeah, I believe
for a Cable Ace Award.
Did you see him on? Of course, you didn't. He did a guest spot on According to Jim, playing Satan.
You know,
and it was real creepy, but in like a way where it's like pedophile creepy.
Yeah.
You know, I want to put it together. Recipes on tape as read by James Lipton.
Oh God!
Can you imagine reading, like, telling you how to make chocolate chip cookies?
Two cups of brown sugar.
But you know what I'm gonna play for you, Mike. You'll love this. These are impressions by Kevin Spacey.
Oh, I like Kevin Spacey.
Very good impressionist.
Mm-hmm. We come now to what for me is one of the most sacred moments of the evenings.
Fuck
it
you,
when
Jim.
My research revealed.
Shut the fuck up, Jesus.
I'm telling
Christ.
You. What's this?
He sounds like Lee half
what's
the time.
What's the point? Yeah, yeah,
we
that
come
he does.
To the moment
that he does.
In this particular area. Oh, it's a sentence. End it.
There's a little bit of Lee in there.
Learn a period. Too many commas, not enough periods.
That a guest on this stage is good at impersonation. When someone has the gift.
Oh, God.
I cannot resist. I am told that you are so adept at it. If our audience closes its eyes, they will actually have the impression that I am privileged to interview some people who might otherwise never have appeared on this stage.
He just drones on.
He puts me to sleep. I can't watch him. He scares
even
me.
Listen, you got to say,
no,
shut the fuck
no,
up,
no, no.
Jimmy Lipton.
Listen, that is, I am not like that. I saw you and Nick giving each other the eye when I used the word idiosyncratic to describe the director.
Oh, no, actually, that was
the whole room.
That was me.
Yeah.
I love how everyone's willing to take credit for that one.
I know.
But anyways,
you
here's the impression.
You don't all get to take credit for it. You
here's the impression. I want to get to
non-book reading pieces of shit.
I got to get to these before I end the show. Because I have to promote tomorrow night's show with Will Estes of Blue Bloods. The star of Blue Bloods. Tom Selleck, Donnie Wahlberg, Will Estes.
Guest is Jimmy Stewart. And Mr. Stewart, generations of actors have admired your naturalism and your simplicity.
Oh.
Now, is that just Jimmy Stewart, or is it Jimmy Stewart playing a kind of Jimmy Stewart?
Look at these ass kissers fucking laughing and clapping for Kevin Spacey before he says a fucking word.
A little premature,
Jimmy.
Well, that's an actor for you. Yeah. A lot of premature ejaculation.
See, I know what you're saying. I'm aware of what you're trying to say. And the answer is yes.
Not my favorite.
Did you see the rest of this episode where a guy stands up in the audience?
No.
No, I didn't.
No.
You can all testify now to the fact that I have interviewed Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, shut the front door.
Would you turn this off already?
There's good impressions.
This is, after all, a kind of interview show, a talk show. And, Johnny, you reigned for years as king of talk show hosts.
Oh, now we're talking.
What was the secret of your success?
You know, Jimmy, I'd love to answer that, but I don't work on Mondays.
That's good. I'm just going to fast forward to Lipton, by the way.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no reason. We don't need any more Lipton. I'm feeling good and possessed.
Now, I understand that you have conducted a long correspondence with Kevin Spacey, and that he approached you once, Ms. Hepburn. And I would like to know whether what's that story? Have you actually corresponded? What do you write?
He is a stalker.
It's a decent Kate Hepburn.
Can you imagine if you got into an argument
Leave
with
me? Leave me alone.
Well, when he...
Oh, shut up, Lipton. You're ruining
on about himself.
You are ruining this segment, Lipton! All right, here we go. Here we go. This is where it gets...
Just a word of advice for our many directors out there in our school.
Clint Eastwood.
Well, I'd say get it done by 4 so you can hit the links.
Clint's pretty good.
You see the end of this episode, a student stands up and makes him do a bit of dialogue from Glengarry Glen Ross at the end. Yeah.
Not admire your diction. How did you acquire it? Could it by any chance have been a result of your training at the Actors Studio?
Listen, I didn't learn tiddly twat at the Actors Studio.
His Brando's pretty good.
Yeah. That guys know.
And frankly, I'm just sick and tired of all you cats just living off my name forever. So leave me alone and bring me the Doritos, would you?
Nothing against the Spacey. Anthony Hopkins is Marlon Brando.
Despite what was just said, a distinguished
amazing
member of the Actors Studio, and this is your second time on this stage, do you have a response for Marlon?
Well, you know...
Yours blows.
He's just stoned, you know. You gotta forgive him, you know. He's crazy that way.
And then here's my favorite, Jack Lemmon's coming up.
Chino.
Oh, Al Pacino.
You've already been immortalized by Kevin Spacey on Saturday Night Live. We all saw that. How did you feel about it? Were you pleased?
Oh, funny.
That's
dead on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's dead on Pacino.
Didn't bother you at all?
No. Can I get a cappuccino?
Wow. So good.
I know that, like so many of our students who remember your evening here on this stage with us, Kevin Spacey often looks to you, Jack Lemmon, for professional wisdom. What is your final word tonight? What is your word?
I wish to hell he'd stop calling me and leave me the f*** alone.
That's my favorite, the Jack Lemmon.
Good one. The Pacino one is a real, real dazzler.
Oh, you were zoning out? Kevin Spacey bore you, Steve? Are you bored by the Spacey?
Anthony Hopkins is Marlon Brando, though.
You know what would
wake
you up,
Steve? See what happens? I told you,
that
Lipton, you get possessed.
You know what would wake you up, Steve? You know what would make you feel good?
White Castle?
Keep those earphones. Steve, why is he so dead?
I don't know.
Lee, why is he so dead?
You're right there.
Lipton was putting you to sleep?
Lipton was putting him to sleep.
Reverberation. See? So when people drone on,
yeah,
with big words.
Well, let me just put it down. put it down to you like
not
this.
Not funny and nobody likes
it. That's what people think.
Yeah. I've never seen this show with Lipton, but I didn't miss anything. I've never watched Inside the Actors Studio. Never watched it. That's why. I'd be asleep in 5 minutes. Never have it.
All right. Well, well, I want to promote tomorrow's show real quick. Will Estes, the star of Blue Bloods, will be on tomorrow night. It's him, Tom Selleck, Donnie Wahlberg on the season premiere Friday. I think it's Friday. It's Tony Bennett and Carrie Underwood. So we will be talking about that and a whole lot more. And we will see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
thank
everybody.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Not an overtime tonight.
Thank you.
And good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Ciao.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. I'll see you later. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Okay. Oh, they're all leaving now. They're all leaving. Well, that's nice. Well, they're all leaving. Oh, there they go. All right. Not all at once. Not all at once. Calm down. Calm down.
Nice.
Not all at once.
Matt, you got gas?
Jesus Christ. No, I don't got... Oh, maybe I do got gas. Maybe...
It's like they were clearing out in anticipation of your gas.
You sound a
little
Maybe
I got a little gas. Mikey, do you got gas?
I had a little gas earlier.
You had a little gas, or are you still... Oh, Mikey. Oh, Mikey. Stop. Oh, Mikey.
You know, at one point a long time ago, did you just say you didn't want no fart jokes?
No fart. This isn't fart jokes. You're actually farting. There's nothing funny about it. Oh, come on, Mikey. Oh, stop bending down in front of Steve. Oh, he can't take it.
Oh,
Steve with the air biscuit.
Oh,
the fly swatter.
Those sound...
The toadstool.
Those sound really wet.
Oh, you know all I was hearing when Lee said idiosyncratic? Touché. Oh, yeah. Well, how are those gravy stains right now there, Mikey? Doing?
Hey, they're called track marks, all right?
Is that a mudslide?
Yeah, Hershey squirted.
All right, this show's out of gas.
Okay.
Enough. That's my Bruce Spritz for the evening. Enough fart pun? All right. No, I'm just kidding. We have a rusty hinge.
Hey, you never answered my question.
Yeah,
my.
I hope somebody uses the term air biscuit after seventh grade.
Hey, well,
you know what? Actually, Lee, you'd be good for this because you probably watched this shit. But what's the difference between Charlie Rose and Inside the Actors Studio? What's the conceptual difference?
Well, James Lipton has the James Brown thing. And the other difference is Lipton has a class in front of him. There's no audience on Charlie Rose.
Charlie Rose's teaching, show takes place in another dimension.
Yeah, he's teaching this class. Charlie Rose is alone. There's no audience. There's no background. It's just Charlie and the guests.
Well, they're both like cable access television that somehow gets big guests.
Yeah, and Inside the Actors Studio is more for the gays.
Okay.
And Charlie Rose has integrity.
I have a question. What show do you like better, Lee?
I'm not saying this to get in good. I like Charlie Rose better. I don't like Inside the Actors Studio is... I know you think, well, that's pretentious, so Lee would like it. But
no, I don't think that.
Charlie
it's
Rose,
gay, so Lee may like it. I
agree with
Charlie
you,
Rose,
definitely.
Man. Just a black background, an oak table, and one guest. That's all. That's it. Minimalism. I like it.
Steve, do you have the goo goo doo doo?
My Merkin's wet.
Is that a bugle boy?
You know, I feel these fart soundboards. Yeah, they were real fun, and like when I was like 12. And
oh,
I them,
come on,
when
you're...
When
you
I got
know
the
you
internet,
play the slide trombone every day, Mikey.
I think Nick's pointing to the button. It's red.
What is that button?
What? Oh, the one you want to turn off the show?
Red button.
Well, first let me have a shave and a haircut.
Shaving a haircut, smoking a pancake, bonging a blitz.
I'm just saying, I'm gonna go eat some macaroni and squeeze.
You got a rattling of the buns.
I'm just saying.
Well, there go our listeners.
Here's the bug zap. You know what's funny is we're gaining listeners.
We're gaining listeners by the fart.
All right, I'm just kidding. I'll leave with you with a symphony finale.
Hey, babe. Hold on.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, what's the real deal? Oh, Mikey. Oh, come on. This was supposed to be fake. Steve's got to put his mouth up to that mic.
Mikey just attempted to really fart into the mic. Oh, Mikey, I told you to lay off the brand.
All right, folks, thank you.